Hey everybody, and welcome to the PC Gamer Show, the timely among you, punctual among you might notice that we're not live today. We are still setting up the office. For those of you watching on YouTube, you can see there are boxes behind me. We basically only have Coconut Monkey and a TF2 poster set up in terms of visuals. But we are still getting things settled. The internet wasn't quite ready to do a full live stream on Twitch, so we are streaming this not live, and we're doing it on YouTube. For those of you listening to the podcast audio after the fact, nothing has changed, and I'm just doing this weird intro for no reason. A nice thing I can say, though, is that for those special few among you, the PC Gamer Club members, who we love dearly, thank you for joining us. We are streaming this audio live to a Discord channel within our club Discord, which means that you guys are getting to listen live, which is a cool little thing that we haven't done before, and we'd love to extend that to our PC Gamer Club members more often, potentially. That being said, my name is Tom Marks. I am here with James Davenport. James,
hello.
How you doing, James?
I haven't been on this show in a dang long time.
It has. You left like forever.
I've
like
been trucking.
You were gone for a week, and then you went on vacation for a week, and then you went to E3 for a week, and then you left for two more weeks.
Yeah. Mom got sick, so I went to see Mom in Montana. I had pre-E3. I had actual E3, and then I had a trip I agreed to go. I agreed to go to South Dakota with my girlfriend for some reason, in a car.
Why'd you do that?
It was all right. Terrible. I ate like 7 buffets. It was insane. There's so many fucking.
That's the thing you call
not
just, out.
Not to speak ill of South Dakota. There's a lot of other places to eat there besides buffets, but the fucking buffets there.
It's the buffet state, man. I can't believe you didn't know this.
It's crazy. There's this one buffet. Like on the outside, it looks like an abandoned Kmart. But then you walk inside, and it's the most elaborate. It looks like it goes back for miles. There's like rows and rows of different foods. It was insane. Shout out to South Dakota. Your buffet game is on point. Thanks for having me.
Postmodern buffet is what that sounds like.
And it's
dilapidated Kmart with mirrors in the back, so it looks like the buffet extends for infinity.
Wow. As we head up towards South Dakota, let's keep going.
Let's go
to the Great White North.
Oh, who's there?
Also joined by Steven Mesner. Steven, how you doing?
I'm doing real well. That was a solid segue, by the way.
Thank you. I was a fan of it.
I was really good.
I liked it a lot.
Steven, you're a little bit tiny this week in the monitor. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're not on Twitch, so, you know, we needed a smaller monitor for it this week.
That's right.
Steven, glad to have you here. It's been a while for you, too.
Also, yeah, it's been a really, like, years, I think, at this point,
probably,
right?
Probably about that.
Yeah.
About years.
A decade. Let's call it a cool decade, an even decade.
But enough silly footing around.
Ugh.
We got a good show, as always, because it's been 2 weeks, so there's a lot of stuff to talk about. We're going to be talking kind of more in-depth a little bit about some of the new XCOM 2 expansion info that came out. We're going to talk about just kind of a lot of news. It's a little bit, like, even before the not going live on Twitch thing, like, it's a little bit of, like, there's just a bunch of smaller things I want to talk about that we kind of missed over the last couple weeks.
Yeah.
So we're gonna jump around a little bit, and we will take questions at the end, but those questions will be from the club Discord. So if you are listening live, tag me in the Ask PC Gamer channel of the club Discord, where people can just come and ask us questions anytime, and I'll grab those and call them out at the end of the show, like usual.
Yeah.
But we got some other stuff for you. Where should we begin? I think, actually, I'm going to decide that, and James is maybe not going to care, or I don't know. James always never cares.
It's kind of my thing.
Yeah, it's your brand, I think.
It is.
I want to talk about Doomfist first. I know.
Boring.
I know.
That's okay. He looks cool. Yeah. Well, jinx, 1, 2, 3, buzz it, you want me to pop?
No, anyway. So Doomfist finally got announced, man. Overwatch, for those who
it
didn't know.
It feels surreal.
It kind of does after so long. Mm-hmm. Like, and Blizzard did it really, like, they had been teasing it a bit for months, but, like, the day that they officially announced him, they announced him at the same moment he was available to play on the PTR. So, like,
it's nice. It's a nice change compared to Sombra's months-long tease and ARG nonsense.
Yeah,
so a big contrast. Learned a good lesson with that, by the way.
Oh yeah, I mean, they, to be completely honest, they knew that lesson a while ago. I talked to them at BlizzCon.
Sure.
BlizzCon that they officially announced Sombra, and like, they knew immediately. They were like, "Yeah, that went on a little too long. Like, we shouldn't have done that long." So they knew for sure. But yeah, I mean, he's a cool character. He's got like a big fist. And he goes,
he's got a Shoryuken.
Yeah.
He's got a Hadouken.
He's one punch.
Not really.
Well, he's got a shotgun arm.
Yeah, the other arm.
Well, it's Hadouken-y enough.
It's not a shotgun arm, it's a hand cannon.
What the hell ever?
Get it?
It's. Okay.
Because it comes out.
Show's over, folks. We did it.
It's a cool announcement, though. Like, this is a character that is one of the. Maybe the first. Character or one of the first characters that's ever named in the Overwatch universe in that very, very, very first trailer.
Right.
Yeah.
And I talked to Chris Metzen at some point in the game's development and was like, so is Doomfist like a big character? And they were like, nah, it was just a name at that point. Like, he was saying he just liked putting two words together, which is why another character in that trailer is called Soundquake. Doomfist Soundquake, right? Like, it was just a name and people rallied around this name and this gauntlet so much that it basically made them turn it into a character.
Cool. He seems like a cool glass cannon from what I've heard so far. If you can get close to somebody, you can wreck shit, but otherwise he's not great at range. Yeah, is that the meta? Did I get the meta right? I don't fucking know what I'm talking about. He's not voiced by Terry Crews, and I also know
that is true.
Is it you who's been like, he won't shut up about this? Ouch. Well,
continue.
I don't disagree.
Continue. Because it makes say it.
Is with the tiny hand.
I will not shut up about that. Yeah. His melee attack, his F melee, just like normal melee, he punches with the gun hand, not the giant gauntlet for some reason.
Yeah.
Just inexcusable, unplayable.
If the gauntlet, every time he uses it, takes a part of his soul away? And so he wants to limit the... Like, he's not going to... If he's just going to punch a dude, he's not going to use the gauntlet. He's just going to punch a dude.
How about that?
Spoken like an MMO player,
idea,
Steve.
Idea.
What's your idea?
A Blizzard character.
Okay.
Who, like Steven proposed just now, every time anyone uses their special, it takes a chip out of a meter, and if that meter runs out, they're never playable again.
They should just patch that into Hanzo as an update.
Oh, all right.
Hanzo mains suck, right, guys?
Bang that old drum again, Steven.
I think Doomfist looks really cool, though. I mean,
I think he's interesting.
He's got a really unique kit. I like it.
Steven, we could go on about Overwatch, but I want to talk about a silly thing that you talked about this week, which I have started calling Guinea Gate.
Sure.
This is like a really weird thing. This is switching subjects in a big way. But
let's do it.
Break down the situation for me.
All right.
And for our listeners.
Okay, Guinea Gate. I published an article yesterday in which Eric Baroni, the sole developer of Stardew Valley, was called out by one of the players in the community for, and I quote here, a very irresponsible guinea pig pet ownership. And so this is a really funny story to me. I don't think people necessarily got that it was kind of a funny story. A lot of people were very angry in the comments I saw, which I guess to be fair. But anyway, so a sole member of the community realized that there is a character in Stardew Valley. Her name is Abigail, and Abigail has a pet guinea pig named David Jr. And it's this tiny little like 5 pixel wide cage in her room. That's like the only evidence that David Jr. even exists outside of the few lines of dialogue in which Abigail references him. This one player saw this, and the tiny little cage that David was in realized realized that this was actually the improper way of raising a guinea pig, and thus petitioned Eric Baroni to change it to accurately reflect what guinea pigs actually need. And so there was three major things. Guinea pigs aren't supposed to be alone. They're herd animals, so she wanted him to have a friend. Number two, they're not supposed to be in aquariums. They're supposed to have, like, the wire open air cages. And then the third one was, oh, they're not supposed to have hamster wheels because apparently they can break their spines, which is horrific. I hope no one's ever, like, killed a guinea pig because they made that mistake. Because I would make that mistake. You think it's a guinea pig. It needs a hamster wheel. So she asked if he would make these changes, posted it into the subreddit, and it kind of blew up. It was a very popular post for that week. And by and large, most of the community was just like, are you kidding me right now? But I just thought it was such an interesting story. This person was obviously very passionate about guinea pig ownership. They actually tweeted at us today and said, thank you for sharing my story, and showed us photos of her guinea pigs, which were really cute. So anyway, so I wrote this story up, talked a little bit about it. We interviewed Eric Baroni, who was, of course, shocked to discover that his game might potentially lead to guinea pig harm, but is on the fence about whether or not he's going to make the change, because obviously it's probably not a best use of his time. That guy's got a lot on his plate with updates for Stardew Valley, including multiplayer, which is still not out yet. So anyway, that's kind of the gist of the story, which we have dubbed officially Guinea Gate.
I'm kind of sad that's stuck, actually.
Yeah.
Too many gate
things. Tom said it is an... I know. You know, it's mostly on me for using it, because you used it in an email, and then I just stuck with it because I thought it was funny.
Yeah, I said that in the email to Eric Baroni that I wrote asking him for questions. I was like, the headline was like, Stardew Valley hashtag GuineaGate, and I was like, maybe that wasn't the best thing to best email ever. To him.
I was honestly kind of amazed that he replied.
He's a good dude. He's a good dude.
He's a really good sport. Because, I mean, this article is something, I mean, a lot of people, I think, are taking it too seriously. Even the person, you know, the tone in which they wrote the piece wasn't like this outraged, incensed, you know, do this because guinea pigs are dying. It was them just saying, like, hey, I just noticed this small fact in the game. It would be cool if you changed that so people weren't misinformed. But I mean, at the same time, if you're taking animal raising advice from Stardew Valley, you got more problems, because that is also a game where, like, you just don't feed your pet dog or cat. It just takes care of itself. You also pet cows to make them love you. Like, there's a lot of things about Stardew Valley that are far from realistic. Also, I mean, the biggest one, you just give people flowers every day and they'll fall in love with you no matter what. Which I wish dating was like that in real life.
Or
am I right, boys?
Yeah, but if you give, but then if you like ever gave anybody fish, they would like hate you forever.
Is that the anti-flower?
Yeah, if you give every single, there's not a single person I think in the like or single romantic character in the game that doesn't like hate getting anything aquatic.
I love
fish. Or any fish.
I mean, like, okay.
Yeah, but if like,
yeah, if someone came up to me and gave me a trout, I'd be stoked.
Would you though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Fine. You northerners.
I mean, like, okay, it depends on the manner in which they give it to me. If someone's like, hey, I caught this trout and it's now yours if you want it, I would be like, hell, like, I would eat it, of course. I'd be like, hell yeah. If someone came up to me and threw an octopus in my face, no, I'd be a little upset.
That might do something for me, but...
What?
We'll talk about that.
All right. Maybe we should move on from
that. Change the topic,
DM me. It is interesting that you brought up the multiplayer thing, because the game recently got localization in like 8 different languages, and then that localization made its way to PC and Xbox. But Baroni has basically said there's not really much more content coming to the game. Like, it's not going to be like a Terraria type thing where this game gets updated forever. Right. And the last big thing we're kind of waiting on is multiplayer. And they said this summer sometime, but we don't know when that is.
Yeah, it's at least console. We got that from like a Switch
commercial or something.
Yeah, because they said it was coming out in Stardew Valley, and then it was Stardew Valley was coming out on Switch this summer, and then it was going to have multiplayer on launch.
Yeah.
And then he followed up in a tweet that said PC will still get multiplayer first.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, we have a vague idea of the timeline.
Sometimes
it's a bit funny, and I want to, like, call him out because I really like his I love Stardew Valley. I think it's a fantastic game, and I personally am not at all upset that multiplayer took so long to come out when it was, I think it was originally supposed to be, like, an at-launch feature.
Yeah. He launched the game when the single player was done because he recognized how long the multiplayer would take. And
right.
Assumedly wanted to make some of the money he had been bleeding out for 4 years back, which is like totally fair. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, like, if there's a subset of that community that's like real bitter about how long it's taken multiplayer to come out.
I'm sure there's
it
some
doesn't
people.
Seem to be the case, because I think most people are like, this game is really good and awesome, and I'm perfectly happy playing it as a single player game. But yeah, I don't even know if multiplayer will do anything for me, to be honest. Like, at this point, it would have been a nice feature to have.
Oh, I'm so excited for it still.
Are you?
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Competitive marriage.
I think I'm over Stardew Valley.
Competitive marriage speedruns.
Oh my God, I'm so excited for that. Now that you said it, I want to do it.
Just saying.
Wow. That's beautiful.
God, I want to see that esport. Mm-hmm. I want that to be an esport. Mm-hmm. Who, like?
What if we're the ones that can start it? We'll be the ones that develop the first one.
I'm into it.
All right, let's jump along from whatever the heck that was.
Guinea gate.
So, I think we've covered a bit of the news. Actually, there's a lot more news. This is why I was like saying that this is going to be like a weird, more freeform episode, because like the news bleeds into what I want to talk about and all that. So I do want to touch on Now Playing before we get too deep into this episode. Okay. Mainly because I just want to talk about Hollow Knight next 2 hours
let's
of
do
my
it.
Life. Steven, I guess before we do that, did you have any specific games, or do you guys have any specific games you'd like to call out?
That I've been playing?
Yeah.
Well, I'll say this. I'd never played Dark Souls 2 Scholar of the First Sin, and when I played Dark Souls 2, however many years ago, I did not do the DLC, and I don't remember much about it or liking it too. For whatever reason, during that point in my life, it was not doing it for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm playing Scholar of the First Sin for the first time now, and it is so good.
Yeah.
It's kind of very surprising to me, you know, having played so much Dark Souls 3 over the past year and a half-ish or so, and going back to Dark Souls 2, and in Scholar of the First Sin, it includes an engine update that includes some of the original lighting effects. So in certain areas like No Man's Wharf, where even if it was dark, you could see everything in the area. Now it's black. It's like very dark. Enemies are hiding everywhere, and you have to use a torch. You have to use like light as a resource in order to navigate that area like successfully. And that kind of thing, you know, also sort of interacting attacks and conditions of the world, like fire with oil and so on. There's a lot more creative combinations and kind of gimmicks in that way per area. And I'm surprised that like Dark Souls 3 now didn't really experiment much with that. It kind of left a lot of the more clever one-off ideas behind. So it's been really, really fun getting back into that game. It's a little daunting knowing how much I have ahead of me just to get to the DLC, but it also remixes enemies' positions and item positions and so on. So it's been very enlightening. And if you have not played Dark Souls 2, or if you left a bitter taste in your mouth, I recommend trying this. And it might work for you this time around.
Hmm.
Anyway,
that's a cool callback.
Yeah.
Especially after how much you played of Dark Souls 3, I feel like you played that game to death.
Yeah. And I've always been down on Dark Souls 2. It's just like a sort of clumsy game, and it's clumsy in a lot of ways and bloated in some ways. But I think Scholar of the First Sin is a better realized version of it, and I'm enjoying it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. That's a good shout.
Thank you.
Color me interested. I've been playing Mad Max.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what's the deal with that? Because Andy Kelly was also playing a lot of Mad Max recently.
So let me give you
a sale or something?
Yeah, I think there was a sale. The Steam Summer Sale. Tom. Yeah, I mean, so I bought it months ago during a different sale, but it was, you know, $5. And then during the summer sale, people were talking about it because it was one of the, I think, one of the hotter items that was selling. And, you know, lately, if you've been paying attention to sort of the discussion surrounding Mad Max, I've been seeing a ton of these comments just all over the internet of people being like, this game deserved better. And, you know, like, it's way better than people gave it credit for at launch and on all this stuff. And which really piqued my interest. And so I went back to play it. And let me give you the final, this is the final word on Mad Max. Ooh. That game got exactly the scores that it deserved at launch. Okay. Like, game is good. Don't get me wrong. But
oh my God.
That game is like when Chris gave it a 77, that is a very fair score. It was funny going into it because that game, like the first 10 hours are really impressive. When I played it, I was totally believing those comments, just like, yeah, oh my God, this game is like a 9 out of 10. Like, this game is so good. Why did people hate on it at launch? And then about like hour 10 rolled around and it hit me like a truck, huh, Mad Max. In the sense of just being like, oh, this game sucks. Like, or not, it doesn't suck, but just, I'm done with this. Like, I'm not going to play this for another 40 hours.
Does it just kind of like, by hour 10, have you seen the shape of the game?
It does the open world thing of like, it has nothing new to add. There's no new ideas beyond the first 10 hours. Mm-hmm. It's just grinding and slowly getting better at certain things and doing the same repetitive tasks. And the game just has, it's kind of a shame because the car combat is so fucking good in that game. Like, it is.
Oh my God, it's so good that it killed him. Oh no! See, this is a good example of why we didn't stream the show today. Because now we have Robot Steven.
He's back!
Is Robot Steven still here? Oh my goodness.
I can hear you.
There you go! Now we don't have Robot Steven.
Okay, good.
We missed out on your very good explanation of the car combat. But
did it all cut out?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I mean, all we heard was that it was so good and so good that it killed the internet.
That's right. No, so the car combat's really good. The fact that it's an open world game that tries to tries to do nothing new with that structure does a disservice to the car combat, because what ends up happening is you spend more time on foot doing these really stupid tasks than just blowing up cars with your own car. So it ends up being a letdown. I think it's worth it. Like, if it's on sale for $5, it's like, that's the most lukewarm recommendation you can give what used to be a $60 AAA game. It's like, if you can get it for $5, it's worth it.
who made it again? Who's the developer?
Avalanche?
The
Just Cause people.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Is that right? Avalanche?
Yeah. And it's
so, like,
it's,
I don't
a
know.
Pretty it's game, too. Like, Andy Kelly was tweeting screenshots that are just lovely.
It is stunning. That is the best part about that game, is how stunning it is. What I'll say is, I think everyone should play that game. I do not think anyone should go in with the expectation of finishing that game. I think get to a point where you start to... Open world games always have this moment where you kind of see into the future. You see the landscape of what's ahead, and you realize it's just the same thing over and over again. And when you have that epiphany, just stop playing, by the way. Because... I don't think it adds really anything. But yeah, car combat. The game has one of the best guns I've ever seen in a game, which is a harpoon on the back of your car that you can shoot into other cars. But you can shoot the drivers of other cars and then retract the harpoon and yank them out of the driver's seat. And that's like how you can kill people really easily in that game, is you just pull up in front of them, aim backwards and shoot them through the dashboard and then yank them forward, and their body just goes flying off into the desert, and it's so great.
Too much for me.
No. Too much?
No. I'm just at prude. Well, that's also a good call. It's cool that oh my goodness. Anyway, it's cool. Sorry, we lost you there for a half second again, but you're back.
That's fine.
It's cool to have two kind of old school shouts here today. Not super old school, but
we had a very front heavy year.
And
I think now people are finally like, they can have some breathing room and kind of dip back. And that's exactly why
I went back to Dark Souls. Steam Summer Sale is the perfect time to go back and revisit some stuff. And I think that's what I love about Summer Sale, is like going back and being like, oh, I wish I had time to play Dishonored 2 when it first came out, but I'll buy it. And now it's much cheaper and I can kind of, you know, get up to speed on it.
For sure.
And coming into that, now I want to talk about the game that I want to talk about. And I've talked about this game on the show already a lot. Hollow Knight.
Hey.
So we finally reviewed it.
Hey. Yeah.
And it took us a good 5 months after it came out to get a review of that game, which isn't, I don't want anyone to misconstrue, that is not a judgment in itself, right? Like,
No.
When we do or don't review games, there's a lot of things that go into those decisions. And it's not like we looked at this game and we're like, oh, that doesn't deserve a review and moved on. Like, that's not what happened. You guys heard me talk about it on the show a lot. You heard me talk about it both then and then the last couple weeks when I was playing it. That's not what was going on. That being said, we did finally get a chance to review it, and I gave it a very, very good score. I actually 100%ed that game. It took me about 35 hours of gameplay, and I got to 100% completion. And there are still tons of things I did not do. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm looking back now online, and like, there are still like, there are whole achievements and whole decisions I could have made, and like, partly quest lines that like, aren't part of 100% completion in that game, which is crazy. And actually, there are things you can't do on one run. Like, there are choices you have to make that will be different. Like, you cannot get the achievement for both of them.
Oh,
a really easy example that's not really spoilery at all. I mean, it's a teeny bit, but not anything serious. There's the character Zot the Mighty, right?
So good.
Who's, like, this adorable little man who gets into these troubled situations, and then, like, you free him, and he's like, ha, I didn't need your help. Like, get out of my face. I'm the strongest. And it's, like, super silly that way. There's an achievement for completing the entire Zot the Mighty questline, which I will not spoil. But there's also an achievement for leaving him to die in one of the situations that you find him in.
Yeah.
And you get an achievement for him just dying. Mm-hmm. So, like, you can't do both of those things in a single playthrough.
No.
And yet a single playthrough, 100%, takes, like, 30-plus hours. It's just, it is one of the most rich, dense, like, lush games I have ever played. Yeah. It is so full of stuff to do.
I can't remember the last time I played a game that inspired as much, and for lack of a better term, water cooler conversation.
Yeah.
There are so many times we'd come into the office and discuss something we saw that day in as vague terms as possible, because we didn't want to spoil anything for each other. But after we had both finished the game, and I did not 100% it, and I don't really have a desire to. I kind of got my fill. But hearing Tom explain to me the things I may have missed or looked over kind of blew my mind. There's entire characters I didn't see. There are entire areas I didn't see. And not only were those just like those weren't just one-off areas. These were huge, huge, challenging sections of the game that tie directly, like, back into the story in very important ways, and kind of even change how the game can end. All this might sound kind of typical of Metroidvanias or you know, this style of exploration, action, adventure, but it's handled in such a subtle, quiet way. There's a very, very subtle language to the world that only the curious will kind of learn to decode. And luckily, the game is curious enough to encourage people, you know, to play curiously by kind of making death using a Souls-inspired system, you know, where if you die, you leave behind a phantom. You have to go claim it back, and it has all your geo in there and everything. But it makes...
Geo being money.
Yeah, geo being money. Venturing out into the world tense and makes you pay attention to that kind of tension, makes you pay attention to everything you see around you, and how that kind of loops back into this just sense of adventure and so on, and the story itself, which is surprisingly a story about bugs, like
I know,
cartoon,
right?
Cute cartoon bugs. Very sad, very
morose, melancholy. You go into this kingdom that's dead, like dying, right? Like you enter. I said this in my review, but, like, you enter a world that has already fallen.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you've entered this place that is, by all signs, completely beyond repair and beyond saving in any way. and there are still people living there. Mm-hmm. And a big part of the story and a big part of what's interesting about the game is meeting these characters that, despite this depressing surrounding and depressing kind of concept for what's going on, are like, there's not really a sad or an unhappy, like an angry character amongst them. No. All the people you meet are like very jovial and fun and silly and like are adorable little bug people. Like, it's this world that is so dark, and then everyone you meet is like just a little ray of light within it.
Yeah.
And so, it's so good.
That's something I really actually love about this game, because it's so Dark Souls, right? Because every Dark Souls game has the exact same aesthetic, which is like decrepit fallen kingdom. You go into the remains of it and you adventure through it and blah, blah, blah. And you meet characters who are still hanging around there. Like, it's so Dark Souls. What I think is so really brilliant and smart about Hollow Knight is that it does that same thing, but then it contrasts it with like this real Disney cuteness, mm-hmm. that makes the darkness feel that much more poignant. Yeah. In a way that Dark Souls doesn't always do. Like, Dark Souls, not to knock Dark Souls by any means, but Dark Souls almost now, it doesn't feel as, ooh, I just threw something. Doesn't feel as surprising as it did maybe when it first came out, like Demon Souls, and it was so striking. And now it's just sort of, it's settled into something that's really familiar. But because this like juxtaposes these two like really conflicting ideals of like, here's this cute, happy go lucky bugs inside of this like cripplingly depressing ruined kingdom, I found it far more affecting because of it.
Yeah. Well, to go off that, and I think one of my main criticisms of Dark Souls is that from the get go, you kind of get the mood. It's kind of a one note. It's very rarely jovial or bright, and it's really hard to kind of get a sense that civilization was ever there to begin with.
And yeah.
Hollow Knight, it feels like you're getting there kind of right at the tail end of this downfall. It feels like, even though it's 2D, because the art is so expressive and the backgrounds have so many layers and they're so detailed, and it's just the character, in each NPC is they're all so well written and charming or interesting in some way, that it feels like it's much easier to get a sense of that place's history and easier to grasp onto the idea that it was once a civilization, not just kind of like, I don't know, Dark Souls, it feels like you're stumbling onto ruins, and Hollow Knight, it feels like you got there, you got to the Kmart the week after it closed. Why am I keep going back to Kmart?
It's an interesting
I don't know.
Choice.
Kmart's closed a lot.
It feels like a buffet without any food.
You nailed it.
Oh my God, that was beautiful.
I mean, honest to God, I could gush about this game for the entire show. Like, I liked it when I was talking about it before, but man, am I in love with it now.
So when you first beat it, you sent me a series of messages very late at night.
Yeah, I was excited, man.
All caps, yes.
Yeah, well, James,
that was during this period where James had broken and lost both his phones, like his work phone and his normal phone. And so I was like, I was looking to text James, and I just had my phone in my hand, like, I can't do anything. And I, like, sent a message to, like, Matt Paget on Discord, and I was like, Matt. And I sent a message to Steve, and I was like, Steven, oh, my God, like... I was so excited.
But during those messages, you said you could cry, and I wanted you to elaborate on that
a little bit
without getting into spoiler territory.
I can't really without going into spoiler territory. I didn't cry at the end of the game, but it is so weirdly effective. And it's okay. So weirdly effective.
That's all I need
to know. The true ending, what it's called, the true ending of the game, which is when you don't even have to 100% it, but you have to do a fair bit of optional stuff.
Yeah.
Like at least double what the game will let you get away with finishing. Like you could beat Hollow Knight in like 10 hours, 15 hours probably, if you're just like playing it without wanting to do any of the optional stuff, and then you could play it for another 10 to 15 if you want to get the true ending of the game. And the true ending of the game, knowing the other endings of the game, is so much more powerful because it, and I'm gonna try my best not to spoil anything here, but like it colors what could have been in like such a weird light. Like it makes it you look at people like at like the way you could have ended the game and been like, oh my God, like that would have been like, I would have been emotionally distraught if I did that and then found out what could have been in this game. And like, there was also just one scene. There's literally one shot in the final cinematic of the true ending of the game that I cannot describe without spoiling a million things. So I just won't do it. But like, there is this one moment that like was really, really impactful on me emotionally. Like it just it, like what it implied and kind of how it fit into the story of the world was like really cool. And this is not a game that like is. I mean maybe it is, but like it's not pushing these emotions on you. It's just they've created an effective story. Like they've really just tell a good tale.
I'm in.
I will say I got the default ending, I guess.
Yeah, you got the quote
bad ending. I like it.
It's not a bad ending.
It's just
and it's not like you failed sort of ending.
No. It's still very, very powerful. Especially for someone like me. If you like bleak shit.
Yeah.
If you like bleak shit, do not 100% it.
Yeah.
And then go back and 100% it and get that
and,
nice
and contrast. For anybody curious, you can do one of the endings and then like if you just do the like, oh, I beat it 10 hours ending, then you can just reload your save and keep playing the game as if you didn't do that.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
So you can just get to the point where you can beat the game, and then just be like, all right, now I'll go do all the optional stuff. I kind of wish I had done that. But, like, honestly, I didn't even try. Like, I genuinely didn't try to 100% the game. Yeah. There was just so much stuff I wanted to do, and, like, I wanted to explore all these corners. And then I happened to have done everything.
There's a lot to love in this game. We haven't even touched all the things. And I remember you, as you were writing your review, you were kind of every now and then you would bark out your word count because there's so much to cover.
Just kept going.
It's nice and trim and perfect now. It's a very great review.
Oh, thank you. just like
but and
circle go
read it. Go read the review pcgamer.com/hollow-knight-review.
That is it. Yeah.
And there's more details on like the charm system, boss design, combat, like
how it's all good.
We got and like Wes. we have an interview coming up with those guys too that Wes will be putting out in the coming weeks. We are all in the office. It spread like a plague, the Hollow Knight.
And it, from what we could tell, not just in the office.
No, in our Discord as well.
One of the things that I think you found this out, well, not just the Discord, but like the Steam sale. I believe you found it out. You looked at Steam Spy earlier this week at the very tail end of the Steam sale. Steven, you might not have heard these numbers.
No.
Before, and this is Steam Spy, so it's not 100% accurate, right? You always have to caveat Steam Spy as being, like, guesstimates. But according to the Steam Spy guesstimates, before the Steam sale, Hollow Knight, in the 4 months that it had been out, had sold about 150,000 copies.
Pretty good.
After the 2-3 weeks of the Steam sale, with it only being discounted from $15 to $10, it had already reached 400,000.
Yeah.
So it sold almost double what it had already sold in just the Steam sale period.
So to correlate that, on Steam Charts, which shows daily active users playing the game, on February when it came out, or January 31st, there was 2,000 people playing it. And then on June 25th, 2017, there was 6,000 people playing it. So the daily active users tripled.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, and it's, I think we didn't, to be clear again, we didn't plan the review, like, we didn't, the Steam sale wasn't what reignited our interest in the game.
No.
We actually wanted to start, like, I've been playing it before the Steam sale. Anybody who listens to this podcast knows that. But it is interesting that there seems to have been not only in our office, but around the net, like this reinvigorated burst of interest in this game, which is great because it's a freaking great game.
Yeah. It's personally for me, it's my shit 100%. It's my game of the year so far. Also worth noting, just real quick, is that if you're on the fence about the game, it's getting a free update this month.
Yeah, soon. Which, they don't have a date yet, but they said July.
two new bosses, like a new fast travel system, and a new stag station, I believe, which is also part of the fast travel. It's an existing fast travel system. So
and two new songs because the music in the game is so good.
And if you play the game, and you can, they have so far revealed the silhouettes of the two new bosses.
Yeah.
And if you've played the game, it gives you good reason to be excited.
Yeah.
Like it's
it does.
Tom and I were taking guesses. Well.
It's pretty certain who the bosses are going to be if you've played the
and
game.
It's very exciting. It's very pleasing to hear.
So I wanted to ask if we can change the subject just a little bit, but same thing. So both of you guys, I feel like also upon finishing that game, transitioned into playing Ori and the Blind Forest.
Yeah. I'm really glad you brought this up, actually.
Yeah, and I want to know how you guys feel about Ori and the Blind Forest coming from Hollow Knight.
So, James, why don't you start?
Well, I had played Ori... like 2 years ago, whenever it came out, and I played up until like the second major level. I don't know how to area of the game.
Sure.
And I enjoyed it at that point, but I think what I like most about games of this kind, or at least Hollow Knight's kind, that are much more about exploration and tension, does not carry over into Ori. They're easy to compare because they're both kind of laid against the template, or at least certain things that you associate with like Metroids or Castlevanias, and that you explore these interconnected worlds, you do some platforming, you get new powers, there's some combat. But Ori is very much, I think, before anything else, a platformer with light exploration. And it does some really cool platforming stuff. That's not what I want from these games, so I really bounced off it. Also, I think the story is sentimental garbage. Like...
Jesus.
Seriously, it's like
I'm so angry at you right now.
That
story is like quintessential Disney, like 90s Disney, when they weren't afraid to like pull emotional gut punches in the first 10 minutes of a movie.
Sure. Okay, I'll give it that. I'll give it that. But for me,
like, did you not grow up watching Bambi? What is this shit, James?
Okay, so it's hard. What I will say is I don't completely disagree with what James is saying. I'm enjoying Ori's story so far, but it is hard to come. Like it is, I would not recommend anybody go from Hollow Knight to Ori because it's hard to come from a game like Hollow Knight where the story is really subtly presented to you to a game like Ori where the story is overt, explicit, right in your face narration with text on the screen.
With just the score, like the swelling orchestra has turned up to 11.
Yeah. And you might not like
emotion.
I like that.
Bloom effects everywhere.
bloom effects.
So I respect your opinion, but I disagree.
I do too.
That's fair.
And I would say that like I do think Hollow Knight's a bet. Like I hate doing like the direct comparison, but I do think Hollow Knight is like if someone put a gun to my head and said which game would you recommend, Hollow Knight or Ori, I would say Hollow Knight. But I feel like going from Hollow Knight and playing Ori and the Blind Forest, it's going to diminish how good Ori and the Blind Forest is when I think it is still like a phenomenal game.
Yeah, the thing is also like it took me at least 2 hours. It took me till getting the bash ability in Ori, which is the thing where you grab an enemy or a projectile and you like throw it behind you and fling yourself the opposite direction. Yeah. It took me till getting that ability to realize like what Ori was and how it was different than Hollow Knight, because I was playing through Ori and I was like, it's weird to me that like all the enemies are the same but they get more health, and it's weird to me that you can like save anywhere and you know it, like that your attacks are auto targeting attacks, like all these things were like strange to me. And then when I wrapped my head around it, that Ori is much more about movement, like you said, it's much more a platformer. Ori is much more about movement and Hollow Knight is much more about combat. Not that they Not that Ori doesn't do anything with combat and Hollow Knight doesn't do anything with movement. The opposite, in fact. But, like, the fundamental pillars of those games are inverted in a very real way.
Yes, exactly. Because I had the exact opposite thing going into Hollow Knight, which was I was playing Hollow Knight and I was kind of like, what is Tom talking about? This game seems really kind of boring. Mm-hmm. Because the first, you know, hour or so is mostly you just walking around slashing at things and doing some light jumping. And it wasn't until I got the cape that lets you do air dashes that I was like, oh, I see. It's just, yeah, like Hollow Knight is like built on a combat foundation and then explores movement later on in the game, whereas Ori is almost the exact opposite. It's built on movement and explores combat.
The one thing, though, and I think neither of those is, I like Hollow Knight as a game more, but for a lot of reasons, but neither of those is like the right way to do it, right? Like, they're just very different games.
Yeah.
The thing, though, that I got spoiled by Hollow Knight with is I completed the first like 2-ish hours of Ori, and I had already like in it. You know, this isn't spoilers, but you know, you're trying to go to these 3 points along the map to like resurrect these or like reignite these, like these things. And that's the point of the game. Go to point A, point B, point C, and the
magic tree and the fucking
exactly
spooky owl.
All right. You've had your rant.
Okay. Yeah, God, it upsets me that you were so incapable of engaging with something that is this whimsical.
I like it. I'm playing my character, guys.
I know, and I'm laying into you. But it does irritate me a bit that James is incapable of experiencing childlike wonder. Everything
that was dead, so dead brutal. Sad. Oh my God. It just really annoys me that you're incapable of human emotion, James.
I mean, it's the world.
No, yeah, okay. But the thing I was going to say is Hollow Knight spoiled me in that I got 2 hours into the game and I had already gotten one of these object things, and I was looking at my map and I was like, oh, I already have like about a third of the health pickups and item pickups, and I have half of the abilities already, and I'm halfway, or I'm about a third of the way up all of the skill trees of the game. And I was like, wait, this is like, this feels really, really quick. And I looked on like time to beat or howlongtobeat.com, right? And it was like, you know, base game of Ori is like 8-ish hours. And I was like, oh, right. Not every game is Hollow Knight. Like, whereas Hollow Knight, when I was playing it, I got to that point where I was like 5 or 6 hours into the game, and I was like, God, this is still really going. And then played it for another 30 hours. Ori was like, oh yeah, this is how games actually are, right? Like, this is how indie platformers are actually created, is they make a like rational sized game instead of like a 35 hour epic.
Yeah.
And that's not digging at Ori. It was just like, I had forgotten, like Hollow Knight disillusioned me into this sense that like 30 hours was just what I was going to be playing.
Yeah. Honestly, there was like a week or two after Hollow Knight where I just like, my girlfriend even left to study abroad for 2 months, and I'm like,
my girlfriend even left me.
she should. I can't feel emotion, I guess. So.
I think, don't make me regret saying that.
But I'm just kidding, Steve. But I just felt this like listlessness afterwards. I was doing that thing where you endlessly, especially during the Steam sale, I think this activates it further. It's like just going through my game list and like, there's all these things I haven't played that I've always wanted to. I got this backlog that I, you know, intend to get through, but I was just sitting there looking at the games and thinking, like, nothing will make me feel like Hollow Knight did. And then I just played Persona 5. But
you know what?
I need to finish that game. I mean, you guys have, as much as I've enjoyed it, I was actually on the fence with even going back to it, because I played enough to kind of be like, this is really cool, I can appreciate why it's awesome, but I don't know if I'm that interested in following it through to the end. But now talking with you guys, I think I'm like, yeah, I need to go put the 35 hours in.
Well, I don't even think you need to do that. Like, this is my recommendation, not just for you, Steven, but for anybody who's looking to pick that game up. I'd say it is absolutely worth the $15. If you missed the $10 Steam sale, like, it is still beyond worth it.
It's a value.
It is a total value. But the other factor is, like, Hollow Knight is a game that gives you back as much as you want to give it, right? Like, you get what you give in a very, very real way with that game. If you only want to play, like, 10 to 15 hours and just finish the game and you're, like, satisfied, it is a satisfying bubble of game. If you want to try to get the true ending but don't want to find every little last thing, like, it will get it is good to do that too. My recommendation for anyone playing Hollow Knight is just play it till you don't want to play it anymore.
Yeah,
right? Just like, don't try to sweat all the little things. Just like explore the world that is there for you, enjoy it, and just like, if you're done with it, you're done with it. That's fine.
Yeah. For most people, 5 hours in, you'll have hit a point where the world opens up. You have a few combat and movement abilities, and you can kind of tell if your curiosity is going to carry you through or not.
Yeah.
So.
Good to know.
All right. I'm
cool.
I think I need to stop talking about Hollow Knight because I, like I said, will literally talk about it the entire rest of the show. Instead, let's touch on XCOM, because I do want to talk about XCOM 2 before it gets too late. Some new info about the expansion came out, and Steven, since our internet is troubled today, maybe you can pull up that list as well. But we got some more info about the expansion. Bo Moore, one of our hardware editors, he got to play it. This is the War of the Chosen expansion that's coming out. An expansion so big they claimed it could have been XCOM 3 if they had wanted it to be. One of the things that got kind of revealed today or shown off a little more that Bo was talking about was these things called, I believe they're a new unit called the Lost, a.k.a. zombies. That is just literally what they are. They're zombies.
Yeah, that's the most like homo zombie name I've heard in a while.
The Lost.
They're zombies.
But they're zombies. And the interesting thing for any XCOM fans is there can be a dozen of them on the screen at once, right? Like there's a ton of them. They're in zombie hordes, but they all have very low health, and when you kill one, you get an action point back and can attack again.
That's cool.
It's XCOM's turn-based way of doing mobs of enemies, right? Mm. Is they're threatening, but you can just string these turns where you kill a dozen in a turn if you're getting your shots well, because they're all really easy to hit, too.
Okay.
Which I think is interesting, because, like, XCOM is not a game that I would ever think you would be able to do, like, swarm tactics in, and, like, this is their way of doing it.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds interesting. I wonder... I guess I should read these impressions and such, but what happens when you hit a reload or you need to reload your weapon? Can you just like take a max of 5 down or however many, you know?
Yeah, I think
period.
I think that is one of the limiting factors of fighting them is your clip size.
And do they stick to the grid as well? Like they're grid. Okay. So
they are the XCOM enemy. They are the weird zombie horde XCOM enemy. Huh. It's just a very unique thing for this game. Within an expansion that's already adding like a million unique things. And there's going to be different types. Like there's going to be fast zombies and slow zombies and all that
zombies,
jazz.
Zombies, huh?
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of weird. I'm glad they didn't make it like the focus of the expansion.
I think like in terms of just like a new way to play that game and a new like threat and consideration, like you have to develop new strategies around this kind of enemy. That's interesting. I wish it wasn't fucking zombies, though.
One of the cool things, they attack enemies, too.
Oh, that's rad. Also,
yeah,
I like these behaviors, neutral. But they're also neutral, they're zombies. Enemies. I don't know. I wish it was something else. But still, that will prove interesting, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Sort of like this wave of... do you know how many can be on screen at once? Is there like a set?
I don't know. I don't think they've said that there's a cap specifically. Like, obviously, they're probably only going to put a certain amount on screen at a time. But they haven't said like a hard cap.
Cool.
It's going to be a lot, though, right? Like, it's not. You're not going to ever encounter like a couple, which is also a change, right? That's like a big change for XCOM because usually you only fight like, you know, 4 guys at once, maybe. It's very different to be fighting these hordes and then maybe also have those hordes fighting the enemies and the enemies shooting at you. It's like a lot of, it's like a very cool new thing. And it's within an expansion that just seems to have so much stuff going for it. I'm excited because I never really, really got to super late game in XCOM 2.
Me neither.
I fell off. Is this being added into the, just over the top of the existing single player?
Yeah. So that's, sorry, Steven, go ahead. If you,
oh no. I was agreeing with you. I never made it to late game.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. That was a question I had as well. And Bo says that it's kind of like other expansions where it's like, you're going to have to start a new game. But at some point you will do a mission within the game pretty early on that introduces all of these different elements that come with the expansion, and then it's just kind of layers it on top, right? Like, it's just another thing within a run of the game. It's very similar to Enemy Unknown, Enemy Within. Yeah. So it's very similar to Enemy Within expansion, where it's just like adds a bunch of stuff and you can turn it on or turn it off if you want to, but otherwise it's just like a run of the game.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm interested to learn more, because XCOM 2 is, I really, really liked that game, man.
Yeah, me too.
So I don't know about you guys. Well, this seems to be the sense of the room, at least, is there was massive enthusiasm leading up to that game.
Mm-hmm.
I played it hard for like 10 hours and just fell out. Like, I just stopped.
I might have played it more like 30, but I reached up like a real hard stop. I'm just going to look it up now. Do you know when this expansion? Yeah, I played like 40 hours of it, actually. Okay. All
right, you played.
But I don't think I reached endgame. I had a problem with that game in that it gave me real bad anxiety.
It's a stressful game, me dude. Too. Everything about me it is stressful. Too.
Like, legitimate anxiety. Like, I don't really get anxiety, but like the decisions, having to make those shots and knowing that none of them were really the right call. Also, the fact that there was always the option to not do anything at all, and sometimes that was also the right call. Mm-hmm. Was a really interesting game design. But anyway, that game like seriously like froze me with fear at points where it was hard for me to want to sit down and play it.
Because now you have zombies to worry about.
Now I got zombies, so but I want to go back and play it. When is this coming out?
I don't have the date exactly in front of me, but it's not like far away. You can pull that up if you'd like.
I'm gonna look and I'll call it out.
I'm excited to basically use it as an excuse to jump back in, right?
Right.
Like I want to feel that feeling again of like being crazy excited about XCOM 2. I think I played it somewhere probably closer to Steven. But yeah, I never really got to, like, I never beat an XCOM 2 match. It was always, XCOM 1 as well was always this weird in-between for me between, like, a game of Civ and, like, an actual game, right? Yeah. Where, like, I liked the early game where I could just restart a bunch of times, but also there is a tangible endgame and a tangible goal, and, like, restarting a bunch will kind of make you miss a lot of stuff in a way that, like, restarting a bunch of games of Civ won't.
So 28th of August is when it's coming out.
Yeah, so
which also just made me realize, I'm like, yeah, that's coming up. And then I also realized that also means just crazy fall madness is going to be not far behind it.
Oh, yeah. Games, it's descending for sure. It is coming upon us. Another thing I wanted to talk about. Let's talk about this real quick. Which is Warframe, man. Warframe got an announcement. Are you excited about this? I was hoping to talk to you about
it.
Yeah, so Warframe had what is called TennoCon, which is now their second annual, basically just convention.
Yeah.
Tenno is the name of the characters in the game, and so players are called Tenno, and they made it TennoCon.
Made a con.
But now every time you say, I'm going to TennoCon, people go, the fuck? Like, because it's so, like, I mean, it's a weird, ambiguous game.
Calling it WarCon or FrameCon.
Why not? Yeah, it's nothing.
WarCon, I think, would have a different connotation with it. Yeah. If you're like, I'm going WarCon.
FrameCon, you go there, there's a bunch of people with, like, picture frame convention, and they're like, I'm in the wrong place. No, that was a terrible joke. That was like one of the most garbage jokes.
Cosplay walking through like picture frame booths.
That was like, don't even humor me, Steven. That was like an egregiously bad joke.
I liked
it. 24x18 oak.
I can rely on you guys to run with my terrible stuff. Oh
my god.
Okay, let's actually talk about Warframe though.
Okay.
They announced this. They're calling it an expansion, but it's free. It's not like a buy thing, because none of the updates in Warframe are purchasable, because Digital Extremes is amazing and treats that game really nicely. And it's called The Plains of Eidolon. I think Eidolon is how you pronounce
Eidolon,
it.
Yeah.
And basically they're adding like a Guild Wars 1 style instanced area, open world area to the game.
Destiny.
I guess you could call it Destiny 2.
Well,
also,
yeah,
but
sorry.
Like,
I didn't mean to cut you off. That was dumb.
No. It's similar. It's similar,
well,
right?
Well, I mean, it's fair, because that's me being one of those Destiny boys. I saw this and went, shit, it's Destiny. Explain to me what exactly it is, though, because I want to know if this is the thing that will...
Well, I think it? So. The reason I make the comparison to Guild Wars 1 rather than Destiny is because Destiny, you jump into like an open world area and you can like kind of run across other people within it.
Sure, yeah.
The way this works is you jump into a NPC city called Setus, and up to 50 players can be in this instance of this city. And in the city, you talk to NPCs, you can buy things in that city, you can take on quests from those NPCs, you can do other things like run around and talk to people and blah, 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 other MMOE-ish things. And then you get into a normal group of 1-4, which is what Warframe does, is 1-4 player co-op, and you go out into the plains of Eidolon. And there is where you fight enemies and you complete your quests and stuff. And that is an instance with only your squad.
Okay, yeah.
So that's why it's like Guild Wars in my mind, because the cities and the hubs are online instances. And then the actual fighting and the actual gameplay is still like smaller groups. But it's pretty seamless. The other thing that you'll be able to do is, like, they're adding fishing to the game, which is very MMO-y. They're adding...
It's also just so silly.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think fishing, like, thematically resonates with what Warframe's all about, because this idea of intergalactic ninjas taking, like, 5 minutes to just cast a line seems real silly.
Yeah.
But in a good way. I'm into it.
They're also doing, you can... excuse me, you can like craft weapons now is an interesting part of it.
Okay.
And yeah, it's just like this big open world hub. It's a big switch for Warframe because every level has been like procedurally generated, you know, handcrafted sections puzzle pieced together into these large sprawling levels. But eventually you start recognizing the tile sets, you start recognizing the open areas, and you know how to navigate them more within those procedurally generated worlds.
Mm-hmm.
This is a large handcrafted map. It is the same every time you look at it, and the encounters, the enemies within that space are randomized for that, which is like a big shift for Warframe, because one of the things I talked to them about, the developers about, like a long time ago, was that they did procedural generation because they didn't think they'd have the resources to make handcrafted maps over and over and over again. And now clearly they're at a point, and they're not going to be, this isn't like replacing the game for them, but like clearly they're at a point where they can do that, which is really cool and exciting.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean,
it's like, it kind of makes you hopeful for the future. Like, is this, you know, the next chapter of Warframe? Like Warframe 2.0.
I
don't want to say that, but
I mean, really, it's like 3.0 because they've done so many 2.0 updates.
Right, they have reinvented that game. But I mean, this is like a dramatic reinvention. I feel like their other big sweeping ones have been a lot more subtle, to the point where, like, if you're not a player, you don't pick up on them per se, because it's like, oh, they did, the world map has a much more defined critical path of traveling through it. But did we talk about? Sorry if I totally just tuned out for this. Did you talk about the Eidolons though?
No, I haven't yet.
Okay, can we talk about those?
Yeah, please, go ahead.
What are these?
Okay, so this is why it's called Plains of Eidolon. There's a real day-night cycle in the game, and this is the thing that has me the most excited. At nighttime, all of the regular monsters on the map go away, and instead these giant colossus things called Eidolons come out, and they're like super tough, massive beasts that you have to take down in groups.
Digital Extremes described them as the hardest content that will be available in the game.
Cool. That's but good I just, for a long I time love, players to hear.
Oh my god! As a Dragon's Dogma fan, which also had a few games have had this system of like, it's nighttime, the game becomes more dangerous. Dating back to like Ocarina of Time was probably the first game to come up with that. But anyway, I just get so excited by that type of a dynamic. So that has me real intrigued. Also, the fact that they're huge. They were saying that this is also like the biggest enemies that we've ever created.
Yeah, they're like, they're 5 stories tall.
They're ugly. Yeah. You showed me one.
They're horrible. Yeah. They're like monstrosities.
Ew.
They look like other monsters, like pieced, stitched together into these giant things. It's really weird and creepy. And the cool thing also is they're 5 stories tall, so they're huge. They're like Shadow of the Colossus big in a couple cases. And the open area of Eidolon lets you jump into what's called your Arc Wing anytime, And the Arcwing is like this winged jetpack that normally you've only been able to use either in like underwater segments or in space segments.
Right.
And now you're literally just able to press a button and equip it and start flying and like giving air support,
cool.
which is awesome because now you can just like have your friends on the ground, like attacking this thing's legs while your other people are like up in the air, like shooting at it above. It's like a really just like weird, cool power fantasy.
Yeah, I'm just so excited for all of this. Everything that's coming out, we'll see if it actually comes together nicely. But on paper, at least, I love this idea that we have Destiny 2 coming out. BioWare's announced Anthem, and they're kind of like these two titans that are squaring off. But then there's still this scrappy underdog stepping into this same space, which is Warframe. And like, I don't know, because I mean, that was always the thing for me personally, like talking to my friends. And we all played Destiny 1, but we all reached a point where everyone was like, oh, Destiny, I'm so sick of Destiny. It's just, I'm over it. And I kept being like trying to be the guy that was like, guys, we should just take our Destiny group into Warframe. It's just Destiny, but better in a lot of ways. I've enjoyed it more. So yeah, now that they're like also evolving alongside the same way that Destiny 2 is evolving with its evolution of social spaces sort of a persistent world map that you go into with quests and stuff like that. I think it's really neat. It's good. It's good to have competition.
I think for me, like hearing that there's a handcrafted space, a big handcrafted space that I can return to and become familiar with, and that they can change over time in meaningful ways. That's exciting to me because that's what, I mean, you say procedural generation or randomly generated levels, and I just tune out. So I think this is a good step for getting that kind of player, a more like traditional MMO fan into the game.
Yeah, I think it's cool. And they, you know, I asked them very directly, is this the future? Is this what you want this game to be? And they were like, we'll see if people like it, which kind of vaguely says to me, yes. Like, in a weird way, it's them being like, if people want more of it, we're just going to make more of this. I think they're at a point maybe where they're big enough and they're successful enough that they can hire the team to do it. Yeah, I'm interested to see more from whatever the heck this is. They said late summer it's coming, so we don't really know exactly what that means.
Too much shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. you said that, and my immediate reaction was to just go, ugh. Not anything against Warframe, but just, there's too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff. But the thing you can know and be happy about is that Digital Extremes very, very rarely meets their target release times. and this is something that I'm not like casting shade. Like, they admit it, right? Like, they never give final dates anymore on any update because, like, they run hot and they run quick and they put out a lot of content very fast. And so, like, if they say Wednesday and then it needs to be Friday, like, that might happen. Which, you know, is, like, not something that we should be, like, forgiving, but also like it's kind of how the company works and it's what the community expects now, and like if they found a rhythm where they can, that works for them, I guess it's fine. All right, I think we should move on to a Twitch chat, or not Twitch chat Q&A, but a Discord Q&A. We did get some questions in the Ask Peeps at Gamer channel, so we're gonna pull them out right here and ask you guys
right here
right now.
Ooh.
Right here.
Okay.
In front of right all now. These people?
Jesus.
Right here.
All right.
Right now. Fatboy Slim? Anybody?
Yeah.
All right.
I know it.
Anyway.
What year is it? 2002?
Sorry. Got flashbacks to the Charlie's Angel movie.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I forgot that existed.
There
you go.
Ask
the fucking question.
Not that existed. There are three of
them. Three?
I think
there
so.
There were three?
Maybe two. At least two.
I didn't... Okay.
Anyway. Let's take some questions, though. Buttface Jones asked earlier... Do you guys have any thoughts about Jump, the indie game streaming service? This is a service that got announced earlier this week. Did you guys hear about it?
No. Heard about this, and
they're aiming to be the Netflix of indie games.
I kind of, the hair on the back of my neck raises anytime any company says they're going to be the Netflix of anything. Partially because that's like the easiest way to advertise a subscription service ever. Or at least, like, the laziest way to me.
Mm-hmm.
I read into this a bit, and I can't remember the exact payment scheme, but I like the idea for, like, the consumer-facing idea of paying X amount a month and you're getting access to this, like, vault of games. That's cool. That's great. I worry about how developers get paid out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And did you read about how they get paid out of this?
No.
I'm paraphrasing because I read this, like, 4 days ago. But it's sort of based on time played, which, to me, the value and, like, the return, I think it's just that's, like, a kind of wishy-washy metric for determining how to pay a developer according to, you know, within a subscription service. But I don't know what other solution there would be. Like, how do you get developers paid appropriately? Do you just give them a huge signing bonus to keep them on for, like, a year? Or do you do it Spotify style per play? You know, you get a cent. I use subscription services, and I realize, God, I'm fucking hypocrite. I realize that they're not always the best for the artist. And maybe it's because I'm so close to the industry, and wow, I'm waking up right now live. Is
James is becoming woke as we speak.
That I, this is probably a bad idea, period.
This is an opinion you're forming as we're
Yeah.
I mean, that's what happens with Q&As. Yeah, so I mean, go ahead.
I don't know anything about this, but as soon as I hear subscription service for games, I can't help but roll my eyes. Yeah. I think this is just, it's, I don't see the benefit of it, to be honest, outside of, like, yeah, you pay dollars, you pay a set amount of dollars and you get access to, like, unlimited entertainment. But, like, I don't think, in the way that it works with television shows and movies, like, Netflix to me works because there is a huge variety of things you want to find. There is a continuing additions of variety of like new stuff that you're looking forward to. One of the biggest reasons Netflix has become valuable more recently is because they've invested in making really great originals. And then on top of that, the nature of television, for me at least, is something that I go back and I rewatch a lot of shows a lot. I've seen The Office like 20 times by now.
20?
20.
Fuck.
Okay, maybe 10. A lot. I've watched a lot.
It's good
anyway.
It's a good show.
But, like, I don't do that with games. I don't go back and, like, replay 90% of the games. You know? Like, I don't see the value. I think it's just a company trying to do, they're just trying to make some money and find, like, a cool niche, but I don't think it's, like, a service that they're actually is valuable.
So I'm gonna play a little bit of devil's advocate here.
Oh, God.
Do it, because we need someone to.
Yeah, no, and I don't disagree. I think it's a dangerous prospect for indie developers. I saw one developer on Twitter talking about how, like, if a service like this gets popular, it risks indie developers having to literally design their games differently. Like, they'll need to design a game so that all of the good shit is in the very beginning.
Yeah.
So that they front load it so that people really get interested and they keep playing. And then, like, or if they're doing it, like, as a demo service and they want to buy the game, then you need all the good stuff at the beginning. It also discourages short games if they're getting paid for by playtime. Like, I agree these are all problems. That being said, and, like, I really do want to support indie developers. Like, I think they need to get paid for their work, and it's really hard to be successful as any game developer nowadays. That being said, like, I think back to the days of when I was a little kid and I could go down to Blockbuster and I could rent a game and I could just play it, right? Like, yeah. And I could play it for as long as I wanted, and then I would return it, or I would play it for, like, a week, right? And then I'd return it, and if I wanted to keep playing it, I'd either buy it or rent it again, and if I just wasn't interested, I wouldn't buy it, or, like, I wouldn't rent it again. Like, renting games, to me, and maybe some of our audience is just too young to even remember that, and that's totally fine. Like, renting games is a really, like, sad loss to me within gaming, because I love renting games because it let me take risks on games that could have been really bad at the time. I mean, part of that is that with the internet, information is a lot easier to learn. You can see a game being played in front of you on YouTube or on Twitch right away and know if you want it or not.
Yeah.
But like, I really do miss the ability to just like go rent a game and try it out and then return it. And a streaming service like this from a consumer standpoint is pretty appealing because you just pay for a bit and you can just try whatever games you want without that risk. I don't know though if the damage it might do to indie developers is worth that, even from a standpoint of a consumer who wants that thing.
Are we just lamenting the loss of the demo?
It's partly that, because demos need to freaking come back. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Part of it is demos.
Or the trial period.
Yeah.
But even demos can be, I mean, like demos, it's pretty easy to front load demos and have that not be, like, demos can be misleading, is what I'm saying.
Demos can be misleading, but like, at least you get to try it. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I think a demo even is like preferable to having to buy the game and then refund it on Steam.
Yeah.
You know, like that, I hate that system. I hate the system that like Steam refunds, or the idea that Steam refunds should be used as demos. I think that's not fair
it's
to
not
any
a healthy
party
intended use.
Yeah.
At all. But
yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. We're gonna have to see is a big part of it too. Like, we'll see what more details come out about Jump, and we'll definitely be trying it. Right. Like, it's gonna be something we want to look at more. And we'll see what the indie development community says around it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take another question. BattleTank09 says, do you guys have any official opinion on net neutrality?
So, hell yeah.
Official opinion, maybe. I don't know. But, like, I think none of us in the office or here think net neutrality is a bad thing.
Yeah.
I think we are all for net neutrality. Net neutrality is a very, very important
thing. No, corporations should have more power. They've only done good for the world.
Give it all to Comcast is what I'm saying. Just give it
I
all.
Like the idea of having a fast lane. I like being able to know that my experience is better than someone else's. That's what I get joy out of, is knowing when other people are less fortunate than I am.
So this is the big thing for me in net neutrality, is the verbiage, or the word fast lane is like a misnomer, right? Like, that's what people are talking about, is that like, oh, some sites will get to go in a fast lane. They'll be able to pay to get into this fast lane. But the thing that drives me crazy about why net neutrality is so important, drives me crazy about people against it, is like, it will not be a fast lane. It will be a normal lane, and you'll have to pay to get out of a slow lane.
Yes,
which is
it's
like
all arbitrary.
If removing net neutrality somehow made the internet faster,
right?
Like, maybe that would be a thing you could support, right? But like, it's not gonna be that. It's gonna be people essentially SPs essentially extorting companies, which is not something I support in any way. And that's Tom Marks talking, but you know what I mean.
No, I agree 100%. Yeah, I mean, like, why would you like deregulate the internet and put the power of it, of access to it, in the hands of the people who have historically proven that they don't give one rat's ass about the consumer's experience? Yep. You know, like, it's just
also,
it's dangerous.
Also, real talk, and this is just like, this is a weird perspective I want to talk to you about with it, Steven, is like,
sure.
And this is getting a little off, and I know it's a bit political, and I apologize, but like,
oh boy.
But like, it's weird to me that like an American law, and I say this sitting in San Francisco, but like an American law, like, is going to be affecting the whole world, right? Like, they're deciding these laws about net neutrality, but like, it's going to affect like American websites, and like those websites are then used outside of America, and like suddenly the whole world is affected by like this stupid thing we're doing here. It's like really frustrating to me.
Yeah, don't screw it up, guys.
Don't screw it up for the rest of us.
Yeah, like, come on.
Yeah, James, you've been quiet, but you don't have to chime in if you don't.
No, I agree with you guys 100%, and it just makes me very sad to think about.
All right, let's take one more question, which was actually asked like a little earlier. Which was just a general question about, like, what is the future of VR? A user on our Discord, a club member called UGAD, asked, let me pull up the exact question so I can get the phrasing right. What's the future of VR look like? If I buy an Oculus and touch controllers, is it going to be obsolete in
Don't
a year
do that.
Or two?
Don't do it.
So, oh, he's wondering about the price drop.
Exactly.
It is real lucrative right now.
Yeah. Oculus, so for those of you who didn't hear, Oculus is running this like Summer of Oculus thing where they're selling a Rift and Touch together for $400, where they're usually $600 and they actually dropped from $800 before that. So like it's essentially half the price it used to be.
Don't do it.
Why are you so opinionated, James?
Well, A, hardware will be obsolete, like, soon. And,
yeah.
Well, okay. Well, the future of VR is going to be better. It's going to be good. It's going to be good someday, probably. That's not going to be for a long time. This first round.
But it's not this day.
I mean, the reason, and I don't want to assume too much, but the reason Oculus is giving this such a price drop is because holy shit, they need to sell some Oculus Rifts. And the people making games and all of the studios they invested money in making these games need to sell some fucking games. And they, you know, they can't sell those games unless people have Oculus Rifts. And I think what the Vive is outselling the Rift like 2-1, something like that. Either way, there's not very many Vive owners either in the grand scheme of things. VR is still very inaccessible from a hardware standpoint. It's getting there, right? But also, it's just so fucking expensive. Like $400, regardless, that's still tacked on to a PC capable of running the games.
Yeah.
You still have to buy the games. There's some freebies in there. But even then, the library of games, it's getting better, and there's some really good shit in there. I would still not tell people it's worth buying, you know, a $400 system for, including touch controllers.
It's such a like kind of catch 22 situation too, because VR is not good right now. Like, oh, it's fine. I think
it's good. I'm just gonna say right now, I think VR is good right now.
I do not think it's worth the money right now, even where it's based. I think VR has amazing potential, but the problem is if people aren't investing in it now, the companies are never gonna, like, I mean, that's a really dumbing it down in a sense, but like they need early adopters in a sense in order to get to where a point, like if people just straight up abandon VR, then I think companies aren't gonna continue to invest in it. And VR will never reach its potential. I'm saying this now and I'm like, that's dumb.
So here's going off of what you're saying, though, I think a key part of what this question, why this question piqued my interest, is because I don't think that the hardware, I think it would be insane for Oculus to obsolete the hardware in the next year or two, right? Like, I think if you do, if you have the money and the means and you would like to play VR right now, I personally think $400 for a Rift and a Touch and touch controllers is like a pretty good deal if you are willing to accept everything James said, which is the technology will likely be getting better in the next couple of years, and there are not many things to play yet, right? Like, those are both truths, but if you really, really want it, $400 is pretty good. The thing I would be crazy to think of Oculus doing is if the next generation of VR headsets means that, like, games can't run on the old generation. Would be nuts. Like, I think the way VR survives is the next generation comes out, it'll be cheaper and better, right? And they just keep making games, and all of the current games work better on this new headset, and all the new games will still work on the old headset. But there's, like, a better version, right, that they're selling as the standard. And in that sense, if you're okay with buying tech that will certainly have better versions put out, maybe you are an Apple fan, then, like, that's fine. Like, people do that all the time, right? Like, you could buy this crappy headset and then a better one will come out and keep using your crappy headset and enjoy it. But, like, there are fundamental problems with VR right now. Like, I think they're really fun, but, like, yeah.
Cords
are annoying, especially with the Oculus Rift. If you don't buy a third sensor and put it behind you, the room scale tracking is garbage. Like, it's really annoying.
That's French for garbage.
Yeah, it's really annoying to turn around with an Oculus Rift. It's great with a Vive, but it's really tough with an Oculus Rift unless you have a third sensor behind you, which is a hassle. And then on top of that, like, the resolution is still really, really crummy. Like, the resolution is leaps years beyond what it was when VR was first coming out.
Yeah.
But, like, it's hard to read text in VR. You can't really do it yet.
Yeah. Also, bold prediction, room scale VR will never become mainstream.
Oh, I disagree with that completely.
Never.
Disagree with that completely.
I agree, too. I think it's way too...
No, do you know where people fucking live? Like, do you know what this...
Mainstream.
Mainstream.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said, like, I thought you meant, like, it would never take off, like, it would die.
Oh, I think it's always going to be a thing or an option. But almost everyone I know that owns an Oculus Rift or a Vive or whatever it is, just barely has enough room to shuffle around wherever their PC is, or even in their TV room requires.
Yeah.
Like, it will be some kind of super enthusiast option or saved for whatever, like, cyberpunk ass arcade we get in 2020. and that's, like, VR is hard to be excited about for me in that way, because it is best as a standing experience, or, you know, in my opinion. There's some really cool novel setting experiences you can have, but I just don't know how that can become the way to play games or a primary platform for a lot of stuff, unless the technology somehow really wows in a different way and gets there. I don't know. I'm just like, I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid anymore. Sorry,
all right.
Oculus.
I disagree. I say never, and that... I can see a world where the sensors get smaller and easier to set up and better field of view, and it just makes it usable in much smaller spaces, basically. That's the world I see.
You're still going to bust your fucking elbow on the wall. I fell...
This is getting a little personal now.
I fell in my house when no one was home. Because
falling and I can't get up.
I was playing Wilson's
Life
Heart
for the Vive,
and I was like looking at myself in the mirror in the bathroom. This game, I lean on the sink. Guess what? There's no sink in my fucking room. I fall, clap my fucking face off the desk and hit the ground. No one's home. I'm alone. I could have broke my neck and died playing an okay murder mystery.
An okay murder mystery.
I love that the game is like only mediocre is like the worst insult to
injury.
It's
a cool game. Wilson's Heart's cool. I like it.
You're like, if I'm gonna die, I'm gonna die playing some masterpiece.
I just
shit.
Absolutely. Metroid Prime 4 VR.
Oh my god. All right.
I'll die in that.
Let's call it there now that we've hit Nintendo. Thank you very much, everyone. We're gonna try to be back next week. Live on Twitch. That is my hope, my goal, my plan, my dream. But until then, thank you for joining us here on YouTube and Discord and that other place, iTunes, and all those places, PCGamer.com/podcast. Leave us feedback. Let us know if you want anything different. As you can see, Coconut Monkey is set up, but we got boxes on boxes of stuff to still unpack. This set is going to be lovely and bright when we see you next. If I have anything to say about it. But until then, thank you very much to James. Thank you very much to Steven.
Yes.
And I caught you during a yawn.
Yeah.
Apparently my outro is not that exciting. All right.
Man,
all right.
You're pulling me to tears. I've been mean today. Ugh.
Yeah. It's been a little salty. It's all right. But
I'm bad.
We will see you guys all at youtube.com/PCGamer, twitch.tv/PCGamer, PCGamer.com/podcast, wherever you want, 1 p.m. Wednesdays Pacific time for the live show. Thank you very, very much, and we will see you next time.
Bye-bye.